that ease the transition that immigrants face as they settle into their new home. Clients are assisted through confidential and culturally sensitive counseling. We offer free settlement services in the following languages: Arabic, Cantonese, Mandarin, Dari, Hungarian, English, Farsi, French, Pashto, Serbian, Spanish, Urdu, Hindi, Punjabi, and Vietnamese. You can contact Immigrant Services, Guelph Wellington, for more information about our free settlement services as well as all our other programs at 519-836-2222. That's 519-836-2222. Drop by and see us at 926 Paisley Road. You can also visit us on our website www.is-gw.ca. Thank you.
This is Walter Garrison, the host of Locavore on 93.3 FM CFRU, and today we are going to be talking about apples. Yes, so today we are going to be talking about apples, and apples are, well, the phrase apple, apple of my eye. The word apple is contained in many different phrases. Apple pie order, meaning something in perfect order, very well organized. The housewives of New England, as a matter of fact, cut their apples in even slices. They then filled pie pans with them in an organized way, row upon row. As one writer said, the women of New England love to have everything in its place. Stepford Wives, anyways. This perhaps explains why it is generally believed that the expression apple pie order began in New England. Then also, there's the opposite condition, wild disorder, that is, apple of discord. The myth says that all the gods and goddesses were sitting around, this is Greek mythology, around the table to celebrate the marriage of Thetis and Peleus, and one of the goddesses, Discord, was a troublemaker. She threw a golden apple on the table to be given as a prize to the most beautiful goddess. It was not an easy decision to make. How could they choose among Juno, Minerva, and Venus? Paris was given the task of deciding. He decided to give the golden apple to Venus. Juno and Minerva were very angry and threatened him. Thus, the myth says, began the long Trojan War. In the 16th century, Spain imported the tomato from South America after Spanish explorers had landed there. Spain then exported the tomato to Morocco, and Italian traders carried it on to Italy. The Italian name for the tomato was Pomo di Moro, apple of the Moors. When the French growers imported it from Italy, they thought di Moro meant d'amour, the French word for love. And so Pomo di Moro became the apple of love. People believe many things about the apple. One belief is that it has great powers of keeping people healthy, a very common expression. An apple a day keeps the doctor away. Another belief is based on fact. The expression is, one rotten apple spoils the barrel. When an apple begins to go bad, it ruins all the other apples around it in the container. The expression has come to mean that one bad person in a group can cause everyone to act bad. Of course, there is Apple Computers, one of the most profitable companies on the planet. Share price currently $338. Estimated worth of the company, $310 billion. Should have bought it 10 years ago, eh? Anyway, what we're going to be talking about today is apples in Ontario. You know, the varieties Empire, Macintosh, Northern Spy, Red Delicious. Ontario is close, is responsible for producing close to half the fresh and processed apples in the country. And the Ontario grower's share of the fresh market, though, has declined since the mid-90s, with imported apples making up a greater percentage of what we as an Ontario residents consume. Now, the health benefits of apples. Bone protection. French researchers have found a flavonoid called floridzin that is found only in apples and that may protect postmenopausal women from osteoporosis and may also increase bone density. So another study that has shown that children with asthma who drank apple juice on a daily basis suffered less from wheezing than children who drank apple juice only once per month. Cornell study has found that quercetin in apples may protect brain cells from a kind of free radical damage that is associated with Alzheimer's disease. The pectin in apples may lower LDL or bad cholesterol. People who eat two apples per day may lower their cholesterol by as much as 16%. There is a study that looked at lung cancer prevention with 10,000 people, and those that ate the most apples had a 50% lower risk of developing lung cancer. And breast cancer for prevention. A very interesting Cornell study found that rats who ate one apple per day reduced their risk of breast cancer by 17%. Rats fed three apples per day reduced their risk by 39%, and those fed six apples per day reduced their risk by 44%. That's a lot of cider. Anyway, so there is a lot of health benefits associated with apples as well. So what I'm going to do today is we're going to talk with two graduate students in the Plant Agriculture Department at the University of Guelph who are researching, amongst other things, apple production in Ontario. And I'm going to be talking to Chris Dubleshoff. How are you, Chris?
I'm doing well, Walter. How are you?
Good. Thank you very much. And I'm also going to be talking to Kendra Sauerteig as well. How are you doing, Kendra?
I'm good. Mm-hmm. I'm a little sick. I skipped my apple a day.
Oh, naughty you. Okay. So let's get right to this. I'll just throw this out here. What is the state of the apple industry in Ontario? I mean, I go into, for example, Longo's, and I see apples from, I've seen them from Ontario. I also see them from New Zealand. I see them from South Africa, from Washington State. Can you shed some light as to the state of the industry right now?
Absolutely. First of all, I think the Ontario industry right now is it's surviving, but I definitely wouldn't say it's thriving, particularly in the 1990s. And from my understanding, towards especially the end of the decade, a lot of people were in doubt as to the future of the Ontario apple industry. Prices were very low. There was lots of foreign competition, both in the fresh market and in the juice market. And so the industry outlook was rather bleak at that time.
Yeah, I agree with what Chris says. If you look at the numbers kind of from the early 90s to nowadays, you see that the numbers in terms of production has definitely gone down. But an important thing to keep in mind is that in terms of the Canadian industry, Ontario is still a big factor of that. And as Walter kind of alluded to earlier, our exports from Ontario have seen a decrease as well, and our imports, conversely, have seen an increase.
So, Kendra, besides Ontario, what other jurisdictions are major apple producers in Canada?
Well, after Ontario would definitely be British Columbia, probably followed by Quebec, and then some smaller production in Nova Scotia and then New Brunswick.
Okay. All right, so I just mentioned a few cultivars, but maybe could you enlighten us? Are there any other cultivars that have importance in Ontario?
I'd just like to mention Northern Spy for a few reasons. One being that's because that's the cultivar that I do my research on, but it's also quite an interesting cultivar because it isn't really heard of. Not too many people know about Northern Spy. You almost never see it on the shelf in the grocery store.
So where do we find Northern Spy then?
In almost all of our processed apple products.
Yeah. So give me an example.
Apple pies. It's one of the best cultivars to use in an apple pie because it retains the flavor and the shape of apple really well after being baked. It's in processed products like applesauce as well. It's in makes up a lot of juice, apple as well.
Okay.
Yeah, you probably don't know it, but you've probably eaten quite a bit of Northern Spice.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I guess some other important varieties, like you mentioned earlier, Macintosh. That's a really big variety. It's still a pretty large percentage of production in Ontario. And it's interesting because it was actually discovered in Ontario as well, the cultivar. So it's a little bit of history. But another varieties, I guess, that are still Red Delicious is still a pretty big percentage. Empire, Utter Reds, Jonah Golds, Cortlands. You could go on and on. There's and then, of course, the newer varieties that just in recent years, something like Honeycrisp, which is getting a lot of buzz. And Ambrosia is another new one that you're seeing more and more.
Now, with respect to these newer varieties, how are they? Are they being planted in greater amounts than these older varieties, and how are they being planted?
Well, some of them you have to watch out because there's patents and things like that. So you need to get your hands on the material in the first place. It's not I guess as widespread yet, maybe, in terms of plantings. But I'd say that probably with new plantings, people are going to more newer varieties, especially Honeycrisp, which has a really good price per pound for it. So.
Okay.
Yeah, there's some interesting sort of a shift in the selection of varieties in apple growing. Traditionally, they have been in the public domain, but there's a sort of a new trend where they call these the club varieties. And
well, the club varieties. Now, what does that mean?
Well, that means you have to be a member of sort of this exclusive club.
Oh, really?
In order to grow it at all.
Is that like Caddyshack, where Rodney Dangerfield's trying to get in and Ted Knight won't let him, or something like
exactly.
that?
Exactly.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yes, you have to be part of this special club, or else you can't produce it.
So, how specifically would that work for a grower?
Well, some of them are varieties that have been developed in specific regions, such as in British Columbia, and only really the local growing region there would have access to this variety. And the way they would prevent others from growing it is they make the cost of buying that sort of so high of buying material to grow elsewhere that it doesn't make sense from a production standpoint. It's just too expensive.
So are often these growers nursery producers as well, or do they contract out the production to a nursery grower to grow the specific variety?
Yeah, that's a lot of them are nurserymen themselves. A lot of apple growers are skilled in that area as well, so they're able to produce their own trees, but some of it is contracted out as well.
Okay, just the basics of apple production, like how is an apple made? Like for the lay person that doesn't know anything about pollination or cultivars or anything like that, can you just give a brief summary of how an apple actually grows on a tree?
Okay. Well, I guess the first thing to keep in mind is that there's a little bit of a delay period from when you actually plant an apple tree to when it'll produce fruit. So you kind of have to plan ahead. I think growers are good planners. And I guess one interesting thing, too, about apples is that they're not self-fruitful. So the pollen of an apple tree will not necessarily pollinate and fertilize its own flowers. So that's another thing that growers have to keep in mind. You need to have other trees or other cultivars in your orchard that will allow for cross-pollination. And this can be cultivars that actually produce fruit, or they can be something like crab apple trees. And it's also important for a home grower. So if you want to have an apple tree in your garden, you need to know what the variety is and what it needs to be pollinated with. So I guess I'm trying to think of
What are the vectors of pollination? Is it the wind or what is important?
Okay, yeah, no, it's actually only a very, very, very small amount by wind. You'd think there would be more, but not really. It's actually mostly insect pollinated, with bees especially. So a lot of growers will bring hives in at bloom time to have their trees pollinated by bees.
We had an apiarist on the show a couple of weeks ago and was talking about that and about the health of colonies, specifically coming in to pollinate just one crop, and having access to other nectar sources, fruit
foraging,
sources. As opposed to just the commercial crop itself. So it's a very interesting topic that we could go on at length, I'm sure.
Yeah, you definitely could. There's a lot of important considerations when growers have bees they have to in their orchards. It's for a very short period of time, but they're very careful about what they're spraying and things like that to make sure that the bees are safe.
And once they're pollinated, how long does it take an apple to become a mature fruit, typically? Like, I know it'll differ between cultivars.
Yeah, it'll definitely differ between cultivars, but usually you see the apple apple blossoms out in about May, and then you're getting your fruit late August, early September, October. Okay. So it takes, it's a long process.
So
it's a long growing season for the growers.
Yeah, people should be looking to go to the U-Pick operations at that time in
August,
early September and into October. Mm-hmm. Chris, can you tell us a bit about your research that you are doing and how that's helping the apple industry?
Sure. As I mentioned before, I'm working with the Northern Spy apple, and it has a couple of production issues which give growers, I guess, a lot of headaches. The first being it has a long period, as Kendra mentioned, after planting in the orchard before it actually starts producing fruit to be harvested. And as well, it also suffers from this phenomenon of biennial bearing where yields swing largely from year to year in a cycle. And so this inconsistency is very difficult from a management standpoint. And so my research is looking at use of these growth-regulating chemicals, which are essentially plant hormones. And these chemicals can have effects on the physiology of the apple tree, influence its flowering habits and bearing habits. And so I'm trying to essentially level out the biennial bearing so that it produces fruit more evenly between years, as well as get them to start producing earlier for the grower.
All right, yeah.
And so
always the goal.
I'm hoping my impact will make it more easier from a management standpoint, but also more consistent from a cash flow and revenue standpoint.
Okay, very important. Yeah. And Kendra, could you tell us about the research you're doing with respect to apples?
Sure, yeah. As I mentioned earlier, bloom time is usually around May, but what a lot of people don't know is that a lot of fruit trees, not just apples, produce way more blossoms than necessary for fruit. So this presents a challenge to growers where they have to manage crop loads so that their trees, you know, they're not getting limb breakage. They're getting better sized fruit, better colored fruit that isn't crowded from small little tiny fruits. So this is a pretty big challenge for growers. And there's a couple ways to deal with it. The best way is to thin by hand, but it's very expensive. That's another issue, actually, for Ontario growers, is production cost and labor cost are very high. Or also sprays, like hormone sprays, like Chris mentioned, or chemical sprays. And another option is mechanical thinning, which is what I'm interested in, because it presents an option for both organic growers and for conventional growers. So basically what I look at is this piece of machinery that thins blossoms off of trees and at different RPMs, and just see what kind of benefits this can provide growers. So is there a time-saving cost how does it benefit the fruit, or does it not benefit the fruit? So that's basically what I look at.
It sounds very similar to the wine industry, which I have come from, where you're cluster thinning, and growers are cluster thinning because they want maximal amount of photosynthates to go to the developing fruit, really.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
You know, they have one or two clusters maybe per cane, and that's it, you know, because they want to try and concentrate those flavors and the development of the fruit on those particular, as opposed to having three or four clusters.
Yeah, exactly. That's the exact same thing that apple growers are doing. And it's funny you should mention grapes, too, because we're starting to see in Ontario as well this shift from older orchard styles to new orchard styles, which look almost more like vineyards, actually, with trellising and dwarfed trees and really trained branches and things like that, which lends itself to applications like Chris's, like better use of sprays, more effective use of sprays, cost savings with that, and then this machine that we use for our mechanical thinning as well.
So that has to make production costs more expensive then, does it?
Well, in terms of putting in these new orchards, yes, they are quite expensive. It's about $10,000 per acre that a grower is looking at. But hopefully you're going to see a change in your production, like your tonnage and things like that. So,
So increased tonnage and increased quality, possibly?
Yes, because of hopefully because you're having less shading and all the things that come with having large trees.
Now, how long will these trees last if you're now training them? They're a lot smaller than the traditional orchard tree, which you see, which is quite large.
I'd say on average they're guessing around 15 years.
Yeah, quite a bit shorter than your traditional 50-year apple orchard.
Okay. All right.
As short as 10 years even.
Wow. From. So they've got to make a return.
Absolutely.
Excuse me.
Exactly.
So yeah. Will they bear earlier than the traditionally managed tree as
yes.
well?
They will, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So obviously the calculations have been done saying, well, this is economically viable for growers if they undertake this system, or hopefully it will be. I remember 10 years ago being in BC and seeing my first super spindle and slender spindled trees, you know, ever, you know, and going, wow. And this was technology, I guess, was brought over from Europe, I guess, or I'm not sure.
From
and,
Europe.
And then now you see it. It's a lot more common.
There is, but you know, there's also a sort of an interesting story behind why BC was the first sort of area in Canada to adopt such high density planting systems. The first being, as you know from living out there, there's not a lot of space in the Okanagan Valley.
Custom land. Yeah.
So the orchards tend to be small, and so growers have to plant density to achieve their production goals. And also, and sort of another interesting note is that for a long time they've had a planting subsidy where growers directly receive money for planting each tree. So because of that, they'll plant them as dense as they can because that's making more money.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's not just a technology point behind that. There was also some subsidy reasons as well.
Okay. And that came from the provincial or federal government? Or
provincial,
or?
I think.
I think so, yes.
Yeah. Okay. I'd be interested where that money came from. Obviously, it went out the door to the Olympics, that's for sure. That's another story altogether. Okay. I'm of two minds of the Olympics. Well, of course. Hey. Anyway, we could talk about that for a long time too. Now, I guess right now you've talked about this change in production schema. You've talked about the high labor costs. You've talked about competition a little bit. Mm-hmm. Okay, I walk into the store and I buy apples. What do people want?
That's an interesting question. I guess what a lot of people are looking for, they're looking for a good color of the apple, like a nice bright red blush or something.
Well, sorry, Kendra, will this change over to this production system will allow for better coloration?
Yeah, it will.
Okay.
It will, as long as they're trained and pruned properly.
Okay, yeah. So there'll be less waste as well, too? Is this hopefully one of
in terms of photosynthesis, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
There'd be hopefully an increased percentage of high-quality market
exactly.
fruit.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Like all fresh right. market.
Okay, yeah. So color, what else do they want?
Mainly, it has to look great.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
the main, still the main selling factor.
But I still think of the song, they pay paradise and put up a parking lot.
Yeah.
You know, hey, farmer, put away that DDT now and give me the, you know, leave the spots
that's
on the apples.
That's the problem, right? Yeah. Yeah. It is very difficult for growers to produce that apple, right? And especially organic growers.
Yeah, in Ontario, too.
If you want a perfect-looking apple, right? And it may not look perfect, but that doesn't affect the taste. It can still taste great, but I mean, if you're looking through the buyer's eye,
right.
And yeah, like Chris said, like it should look good. Usually sweetness, but not a flat flavor. A little bit of complexity to the flavor, and good size. Usually, if it's a fresh market apple, fancy grade, then you want something that's on the larger side. And
is fancy grade the top grade? What is the top grade for
extra apple? Canada extra fancy.
Canada extra fancy. Okay, yeah. And then the grade below that would be
extra fancy.
Extra fancy.
Just fancy.
Just fancy. Okay. Yeah. So yeah. I go to the Guelph Farmers Market, for example, and this show is called Locavore, and we're all about supporting local growers, whether they be organic, conventional, whatever. And I look at the size of the apples, and I would agree with you that they are large apples. There. They're also very expensive apples. Apples too, and I guess there's the whole juxtaposition. We want to support growers. We want them to succeed, and we don't want them to rip out apple orchards and put them into houses.
Right.
You know, I think we take apples for granted here. Mm-hmm. You know, that we're always going to have a Canadian apple industry, but is that the case or?
I think what you just mentioned about trying to buy local, not necessarily. At a farmer's market, but just even if you go to your neighborhood grocery store,
okay.
if there's a choice, choosing local is going to support the local grower.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes, you are going to receive a better quality product. Right. Choosing the local product, it's not necessarily cheaper, particularly, you know, in the off season, such as coming up the next few months, it may be cheaper to buy that imported apple from you know, New Zealand. But you're not necessarily getting a better quality product.
Now, have there been any studies done on the nutritional value of local versus imported apples at all?
I'm not sure. A lot of people think that, like, local might taste a bit better because it's probably a fresher apple. Okay. I'm not sure.
Okay. I think there's something to that we just talked about here, and that's New Zealand and well, Washington State as well too, and, you know, getting apples in it. Well, all it's like tomatoes. You have a fresh tomato every single day, 365, 24/7.
Yeah.
You know, is there a danger to the Ontario industry with imports and tech and, like, I guess refrigeration technology as well too?
Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, when you go to the grocery store, you just see percentage-wise, like, how many are from far away and how many are from Ontario. And it's really a shame because Ontario is just such a great province for growing apples. And it's so well-situated, too, for the North American market. Like, it's by a large center, Toronto. It's centrally located. You can grow apples in so many different parts of Ontario. So really, it is kind of frustrating sometimes to see these apples that probably don't taste any better than ours. Mm. That are getting a larger share of the market. So,
something that struck me last fall, I think this was about sort of mid to late September, I was in the store, and during that week I had done several trips to Simcoe as part of my ongoing Apple project, and I noticed when I was there that they were doing their annual gala harvest, which is a popular cultivar, a nice sweet apple. And so it was being harvested across the province that week. And sort of the end of that week, I was at the store and I was looking on the shelf, and they had gala apples, but these were Chilean. So right in the middle of the Ontario apple harvest, we still had Chilean product on the grocery shelf. And a lot of that is because of the post-harvest technology that we do have in the industry today. Controlled atmosphere where they alter the gaseous content of the storage room greatly extends the shelf life of fruit product.
And that reduces the ethylene that's given off?
No, that actually, the controlled atmosphere itself just slows down respiration.
Yeah.
So it preserves the cellular activity for longer.
Right.
As well, they have a product actually out of the U.S. called 1-MCP, which essentially stops the ethylene pathway from running. And the ethylene pathway is the ripening pathway in fruit.
Right.
So so those two technologies together with controlled atmosphere and the 1-MCP can make an apple picked in September 2009 last till January 2011. So
really?
Yeah, like
wow.
16 months potentially on some varieties.
Wow.
So
mm.
that allows your Chilean and New Zealand product to be shipped all over the world really any time of the year.
Mm. Well, we've just got a couple of minutes left and we could talk about this at length. And it's a very interesting topic. So if I was to get just a brief summary of in future what people can do to support the Ontario apple industry, what would you say?
Well, there are some things that Amafra's doing, like the Pick Ontario Freshness marketing campaign and things like that. And I think that just I think one of the best things you could do is just to support the local food movement when you can. Like, you know, nobody's perfect, but if you're in the Ontario grocery store during gala harvest, pick that gala that's from Ontario versus Chile. You know, it'll probably taste a little bit better, you know. And radio shows like this, you know, where you're spreading knowledge about local food and how lucky we are to live in Ontario and have all this great food right at our fingertips.
Yeah,
absolutely. Like Kendra said, if it's, if it's the fall and you're looking for a nice, wholesome produce for your family, maybe consider that local farmers, local apple farm, perhaps, maybe not even a farmer's market. Maybe they have a direct farm market. And oftentimes, if you go to these on-farm markets, it's just as cheap, if not cheaper, than than the grocery store, and the quality is 1,000% better.
Yeah, so. I will attest to that. That's true. Well, I want to thank Kendra Sauerteig and Chris Newell-Shaw for coming in and talking to us about apple production in Ontario and Canada. I've learned a tremendous amount, and I hope that you have as well. I think that the point about supporting local apple production is incredibly important. We have to do this. We have to make sure that despite foreign competition and I guess cheaper imports, we have to look at supporting the growers, because this land may not be in production for agriculture forever. So hopefully you've taken away something from that today, and come back again next Thursday at 10:30, where we'll talk about another locally produced product in Canada.